This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
I don't even have to say the name of the show anymore, Jeff. I've got it all worked out. Yeah. Yeah, you like that? Yeah, it's getting evil up in here. This is the best take. I mean, I didn't even use this the other take of the show here. It's Shake Them Ropes. I'm Chris Novembrino. I can record that into the keyboard here, too. Check it out. I can go, Chris Novembrino, and then it'll go...
Chris Novembrino.
Yeah, it gets better.
I remember this
goes.
Episode of the Cosby Show. Everybody went to go visit Stevie Wonder in the recording studio.
And I don't remember that one, but yeah, that's Jeff Hawkins, and we're here to talk to you about wrestling and AEW and demography and WWE. And some cool stuff that Bailey and Sasha are doing, and the news, the wrestling news. We like to talk about the wrestling news. You like it when we talk
about that. I think the biggest news on this show is that you actually record an episode for the Patreon for the 9 people left hanging on by a thread.
And you know what? Based on that, the people have enjoyed.
Hold on. Patreon.com/shakethemropes. Should you want to throw a couple ducats our way?
Yeah, okay, because here's the deal. You got to play it up. You got to play up the product here. First and foremost, that is the first episode of High Wattage with a multi-track Chris Novembrino live performance of the theme song, which changes slightly every time I do it because I don't remember how I did it the last time. And on that episode, we did not one, not two, but 3 Eric Watts matches. I made GIFs. There was a media push for this episode of High Wattage.
You made an effort. It was unreal.
Yeah, not a ton of it. Not like I wouldn't say I like went deep on this. I added matches as I was recording the show, and there was no post production. But I also did such a good job writing the music while I was on the show. When you make something good, you don't need to touch it up ever.
It's a noble Rob McCarron in year 4 half-assed effort.
But this here's the thing. The trickiest part with Eric Watts is like finding matches because I don't keep track of which matches I have and haven't watched. I don't necessarily know what matters, but like
if you reviewed the same match every episode and just didn't realize you were re-reviewing it.
Yeah, I just try to pick. I try to pick matches with at least one wrestler. So like, I'll try to have him versus a jobber, and then I'll try to flip that up with like him versus Eddie Guerrero, or like him versus like a really good wrestler, and where you could really see Watts just kind of struggling against like a good hand. Those are fun. So High Wattage, it's back. It's better than ever. What's that Patreon, Jeff?
Patreon.com/shakethemropes. Shake them ropes, all one word.
I might make another episode. It could happen.
I'll have to give you the login so you can actually upload it.
What's going on in the news, Jeff?
Oh, low ratings, middling ratings. Chris Jericho taking a victory lap over, I guess, okay numbers.
So that was so strange on AEW. When I watched that and he does that opening segment and he starts talking about the demo. And it's in that weird Jericho middle of the road thing where it's like you can't quite tell if he actually seriously believes this demo crap coming out of his mouth or if it's this joking on the square thing where like he's aware that this is silly talk and he's just trying to work it in. But in either case, whether it's he believes it or he's working on the square, then he's still just playing to the back of the room. This is for people mostly on Twitter or people who have Twitter accounts that are active and have other venues as well, but are also active in the Twitter conversation about this. It is talking about the demo for that crowd, I don't know how big the demo sphere is in discourse land. Maybe several hundred people, generously. Like, it's a very weird gimmick to have Le Champion working under.
All right, look, I'm fine with every time you have a new catchphrase coming out with a t-shirt. I think this is a marketing industry. I just think this is more meta, break the fourth wall, self-aware stuff, though, to me. I mean, but again, it might be a generational thing, because I grew up in the territories where I watched guys and I thought they were cool. And then they talked about how cool they were. And they did talk about, you know, ratings go up when we're on the TV screen, but it wasn't the self-aware kind of thing.
It wasn't like ratings go up when we're on the TV screen and here, allow me to show you an Excel spreadsheet wherein you can see there is a spike when we're on, particularly with the ladies demographic. Like, they wouldn't get technical about it. They would just say in an oblique way, you know, when we're on the screen, the ratings go up. But, like, I mean, there wasn't, like, numbers to back it up. And also, when a heel was saying it, they were saying it in a way where you couldn't prove them wrong.
Well, okay. Raw has its lowest numbers, I think, to date this week.
But how they doing?
they did okay, I guess. I mean, they're still top three in the night. They're doing.
So I could do like a little major chord for that. That doesn't really. It doesn't get that major. It even yeah.
SmackDown's doing 1.8 million. Raw's doing 1.6, and AEW and NXT between the two of them are kind of splitting them with, you know, AEW's fourth on the night this week, and NXT is down because of the demo.
Wait.
The demo.
Yeah, I mean, like, at least use the prop if it's going to be here.
But I have a more existential fear, and my fear, and it's just weird. I just think because nobody wants to take this seriously anymore, and both companies have divergent opinions on wrestling, and I don't think either of them are right. WWE wants this big character, Ringling Brothers atmosphere with certain stories that aren't terribly well written, you know, but everybody's big and everybody's strong and it's an event and it's, you know, we're the worldwide leader in entertainment and, you know, it's this person's turn for a program. So we're going to do this program here. To me, the only thing compelling right now is the women's division, and that's because Asuka, Bayley, and Sasha are carrying this thing on their backs, but it's still low ratings, which makes me worry that they're going to blame those low ratings on the women.
Yeah, I don't see them blaming them on Jeff Hardy and Sheamus. I'm sure, if anything, you know, the consensus opinion backstage is that, like, that's a great program. Let's keep doing it.
It's not the fault that we bring in hot young baby faces and bury them week after week. Or, you know,
or we do a Bray Wyatt Braun Strowman program that is at generously half thought out narratively.
Yes. You know, we beat Matt Riddle in week three or week two of his. It's like, what? What? Kind of thing. And then you get to AEW and their formula is we're going to have good to great matches every week. We're going to have, you know, The mid card is going to get someone on the top of the card, and, you know, in theory it raises their profile, but it really doesn't. And then you don't really have stars per se.
But the big angle tends to be the conversation piece leaving AEW each week. And so it's like, until I saw the recap of the show here, I'd forgotten about the Cody and Sonny Kiss match. Like, my big takeaway from this week in AEW was the orange juice spot. Because, oh, by the way, Chris Jericho made sure it was the last thing you remembered as he was signing off from the program, almost stepping on Shivani, then holding back, and then waiting so that he could get the, I'm covered in orange juice, right at the end of the show as you're signing off.
And that, to me, is WWE derivative.
Exactly. No, it's totally WWE light, and it's like overshadowing the other part of the show that is not WWE light so much.
you know, I don't mind the occasional angle like that. I'm going to be honest with you, because all wrestling has it. You have Cornette and Mid-South with the birthday cake, all these things. But I think the answer to a dying industry is you play it straight and you just make good television out of it, and you don't do the wink and nod stuff. You don't do self-aware stuff. You make it seem real, and then everybody else will buy in. There seems to be this thought that because people know it's predetermined that we have to have certain wink, wink, nudge, nudge aspects to it. I mean, I like Marco's stunt. I don't think he should be arrogant babyface Marco stunt.
Yeah, because, it's so weird.
Because people will watch that and go, who's this guy? And whose ass can he kick? And those types of things. And you can prove people wrong eventually, but, you know, right
then. Well, if you're going to have him be a cocky little shit, which is, I think, kind of what was coming to your mind there, if you're going to have him be that character, then he has to wrestle a much more aggressive style of match.
Yes.
Wherein he is getting a ton of offense and it, like, kind of going, we were talking about him before the show, but kind of going at the tempo of Leo Rush back when he first kind of showed up in WWE, like when Leo was really kind of going at that super fast speed, because like that's the only way anyone's ever going to believe that a person who is that size can, you know, kind of hold their ground against the people who would populate the top of the card, a Brian Cage type of person. It would have to be knowing that the Marco stunts of the world have this level of speedy offense and kind of targeted precision-oriented offense. And, like, Marco's stunt does the cocky thing and then, like, kind of, you know, he wrestles a bit of a casual match.
He wrestles a very well-choreographed match. Let's put it that way. I mean,
yeah, there's not aggression. No, the choreography sort of belies the lack of intensity and aggression and kind of, like, reckless abandon, I think, would be necessary to really get over the arrogant side. And if you don't want to go that route, that's fine. Then just cut the arrogance act.
And those of you who are New Japan fans, come on into the boat of being frustrated with your booking, because you got a nice helping dose of what the hell is this week with the evil turn and the return of Dick Togo. And just, I don't know, Chris. I could be wrong on my theories of what could make wrestling bigger again, in terms of I just want smack talking stars and I want a fight build, and I don't need great wrestling week to week. I need great wrestling builds that build the good matches that are hot and have drama to them. That's what I want. But my fear is that professional wrestling has become like another art form in America. It's swing music. It's big band. There's just other art forms and sports and things that have taken aspects of professional wrestling, and now it's just a relic. It's gone.
And
the
good stuff of big band, like, to kind of pick up on this, we'll go a different place than we did in the first take of this. I got a different take on this. The good stuff of big band gets picked up by subsequent genres of music. So rock and roll picks up the cool driving sections of big band, like when the band would really start rocking and they really, you know, push that two beat. You know, the two and the four really gets accentuated. Big band does that. Rock and roll picks that up. The cool horn playing and the interesting harmonies, that gets taken and built upon by people like Miles Davis. John Coltrane goes whole different directions under that. And even guys like Thelonious Monk, who kind of, you know, they have a thing and they do that. They do their thing kind of steadily throughout that. He takes a lot of cues out of big band, a lot of cues just out of stride piano playing. He goes his own way. And big band stuck doing this weird legacy performance, and it just ends up sounding really dated. And so the calendar kind of rolls by, and we, you know, go through the 60s. Beatles show up in 1963. People are still playing Take the A Train. The Beatles are up there, you know, doing all these Twist and Shout and that sort of thing. The popular chord progressions are changing. 1-4-5 overtakes like the 1-2-5 as a dominant chord progression. Get to 67, you got Hendrix just wailing with his wah pedal and stuff, playing like these crazy 7 sharp 9s, picked up from big band jazz voicings. Meanwhile, you still got Count Basie over here. And you know, like, and so by the time you get into the 70s, like, there's just no audience for that performance of it because big band didn't change with the times. It tried really sort of stubbornly to keep doing something as close to the way it was as possible. And Vince has been like that since like 2000. Ever since WWF turned into WWE, it's like he's wanted the presentation of the show to almost feel like a time capsule where you can kind of dive in between 2002 and 2012 and the show kind of looks and feels the same way.
Every star Vince has had has done something on their own to make themselves stars, and then they put the rocket to them. And, you know, I'll just go back to the big band theory. Like, one of my favorite stories is the story about Duke Ellington's band Live at Newport, 1956. And the story about, you know, they you know, they're kind of past their prime at that point. You know, they're playing, you know, it's 56, so rock and roll has started to come in. And then they're, you know, they're kind of on the, as we like to say with the rock and roll people, they're on the county fair tour, so to speak. But they go and they play this
puppet show in Spinal Tap.
Yeah, you know, kind of thing. But they're playing this at the jazz festival, and they get to diminuendo and crescendo in blue. And you know, audiences are kind of tired by this point. They've been sitting in there. You know, some of them are leaving for their cars. And then this guy, Paul Gonzalez, tenor saxophone, gets up, and he starts playing this solo. And he starts playing it. And it keeps going. And the audience starts to turn. And Ellington looks at him and goes, "Dig in!" And they just keep going and going. And the audience starts to get up and dance a bit. And people are running from their cars back to this because this band, this solo has gotten so friggin' hot. And it continues to go, and you can just hear the crowd going. You can hear the band getting into it and everything. That's the kind of thing that it's the danger is missing in professional wrestling, kind of, in terms of promos.
That was the thing that Duke Ellington found there that night, that, like, what people like is the sense that anything can happen. And wrestling has really lost that in a certain way. It almost all feels like ritual.
There's no reading of the crowd, quite frankly. There's we're going to give you what we think the crowd likes, and we're going to go with this. But they never, you're not allowed that. And you hear this from older guys who have gone back to the WWE a bit, and guys who have been in the territory system, and they're now like they're doing like a one shot on TV somewhere. So they go there's not that ability to kind of test the crowd to see what they want on that night and go with it. You have the style you're supposed to do, and that's it. I'm all over the place on this, Chris. I'm just very frustrated.
Well, no, like, I mean, it makes me think about Rey Mysterio on some level. Like, WWE has been booking him, and this is not just this run, but, like, this run is sort of emblematic of it as well. Although this one's almost a little bit more thought out than some of these previous ones. It's been like a ritual, like, oh, you guys all remember Ray, you all know Ray, you all love Ray, but it was WCW that really got him over for American audiences.
Oh, do you remember One Night Stand when they brought him in to fight Psicosis because there was so much goodwill about ECW at the time, and everybody was really hyped? This is the second one, I think. I don't think it's the first one. Maybe it's the first one. I don't know. But he goes in there. And instead of wrestling the Rey Mysterio as ECW or WCW, everybody knew, he wrestled WWE Rey. And they booed him out of the building for a while until he had to adjust to it. Yeah, no. Vince's thing, and you see this with the Jeff Hardy program, you see this with the Rey program, is, well, people pay to see the Rey Mysterio that they knew and loved back then. That's what they want, so play the hits. And it's just, I don't...
And they did that with Matt Hardy. Remember when they brought in Matt Hardy?
Yes.
At the peak of broken Matt Hardy? And they were like, be Matt Hardy 98, the one for Men 64 that we all love to play as.
Yeah, I know. But it's, you know, it's AEW is not free for my criticisms, because watching that FTR Lucha Brothers match where... Look, I like the Lucha Brothers a lot. I love Rey. I have my issues with Penta because I think he's become a WWE wrestler. He's doing his
He found all those spots. Yeah. No, well, dude, I mean, he was working these really horrible and brutal matches back in the day. In Lucha Underground, he was transitioning from the extreme stuff to realizing in America, you could get over by just kind of working your catchphrases and stuff. And, like, now he does feel like a Pentagon cover band.
Yeah, and they had FDR kind of wrestle their match instead of the other way around, which I think kind of hurt FDR in a bit, but you know, I don't see big stars coming out of AEW. I think there are a lot of really good wrestlers, and there are a lot of people that wrestling fans like, but you know, it's like any other TV show to me. You know, when the kids go out to play amongst themselves and they play wrestling, they're not necessarily doing 4-star matches. They're doing catchphrases and pretending to be, you know,
high spots. Yeah, no. Don't forget about trying to find something to jump off of and do like a really measured out choreographed high spot and then maybe a submission hold.
Yeah, so
Sonny Kiss kind of ended up in the Orange Cassidy spot here this week, having the very good match against Cody. I just don't feel like this type of booking really helps the losing party.
Doesn't help the winning party either. That's the thing. Is it supposed to?
That's also true.
We're gonna elevate the young person.
The story of the match is the underdog.
Yeah, and. If you're going to have an underdog, if you want a feel-good story, have the underdog win. Otherwise, you're just wasting our time these days, I think. Unless it's in a special spot. Unless you had done like a 4-week build of Sonny Kiss versus Cody to get that one match here. And then this match would feel like something. But it's just, okay, and then next week, Janelle and Sonny Kiss are going to fight, you know, Butcher and the Blade or something like that. And we're just going to move on. We're burning through these things, and
the other thing is, like, the Orange Cassidy section. So it's hard not to get the image of Santana pratfalling over and over and over again in, like, an inch of orange juice, maybe, and then trying to drag down Ortiz. And Ortiz is like, I'm not going to do this with you, dude. You're on your own on this. And Santana's like, I'll fall for all of us. That was ridiculous. But moreover, that was designed to get Orange Cassidy's heat back. And it was the exact wrong thing that needed to happen following that match. Like, if you wanted to get Orange Cassidy's heat back, what should have occurred there in that spot? Jericho's out there cutting his promo about this, that, or whatever with the Inner Circle. Orange Cassidy needs to come down and beat the hell out of everyone in the Inner Circle. Like, just with a bag of oranges. And maybe even, you know, like, have him come down there and he just pummels the hell out of all of them. Santana, Ortiz, Jericho, like, and Jericho, you know, is convinced initially that, like, the Inner Circle is really tight and that they're going to have his back, and it's 4-1, Orange Cassidy, what are you going to do? Your friends aren't here, no one's going to help you. And Cassidy just goes in and waylays on him. Especially if Cassidy can't talk. But him going back to the comedy stuff, like, this is not him getting his heat back. Not from where it was 2 weeks ago. He's less hot than he was now. And the rematch, I also don't think will help him. So it goes back to what we were just saying with Cody and Sonny Kiss. Like, this is not a way to make underdog baby faces hotter. And they keep trying it over and again, and it hasn't worked yet. Like, you don't like Pineapple Pete more now than you did 6 weeks ago or whenever they did the Pineapple Pete spot, if it was even.
I hate that guy.
I hate that guy too. I really do. He bothers me. And Orange Cassidy.
So you're saying the Ortiz cell was too much?
Oh god. So was it Santana or Ortiz? I don't want to slag the wrong one.
I believe it was Ortiz.
Was it Ortiz, dude? Okay, that pratfall. Like, I think that if he went backstage after doing that at a WWE show, Vince's reaction would be one of two things. And it'd be like the big spectrum, right? Like, either Vince would love it because he would have found it hilarious. Like, this, damn it, kid, you're just so great at comedy. This is funny. You got to do this in all your matches now. And then, like, the next week, Ortiz is wrestling and, like, taking, like, pratfalls out of nowhere in the middle of his matches coming off of the ropes or whatever. Or he'd go back and, like, Kevin Dunn would give him this, like, big scolding lecture about, like, that's terrible. Don't ever do that again. About doing the pratfalls to him. No one finds that funny. No, Vince does not like that. Even though we all know that Vince likes that kind of stuff. Point being, I mean, dude, the Inner Circle and Chris Jericho just occupy far too much of what you remember from week to week on this show. And I until we read the recap here, I forgot that Sunny Kiss came in with an entrance involving the Jacksonville Jaguar cheerleaders. Like, that should have stuck in my memory. And instead, what I remember is Ortiz flopping around like he's a fish in orange juice. And then Chris Jericho screaming right as he's going off air, I'm covered in orange juice. I'm covered in orange juice! Just making sure that that's the sticking memory in your brain here. They really got that idea over. Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks defeated the Jurassic Express. I love this match. Yeah, this is a good match. Yeah, for sure. Dude, I liked Omega. Okay, I liked Omega after the match right up until, like, he started going into his hammy thing. Like, he gets, you know what I mean? Like, where he does something and it's good and then he does it too much and it's not so good.
Yes, the mustache twirling on the heel turn is a little much.
Yeah, right. Even the dynamic with FTR and everything, like, I get it. Okay, the other thing I like is I like the long game that's happening between FTR and Adam Page and Kenny Omega, where they're trying to drive a wedge between the two guys. They know that, like, they're not tight, and so FTR is like, Adam, we like you, and Kenny, you suck. I think they're going to turn on Adam. Initially I thought, like, oh, maybe Adam's going to, you know, flip it and, you know, join with FTR, but I think what FTR is trying to do is just drive the wedge between them, and I like that, and I like that they're playing that subtle.
Chris, I have an update. Tully Blanchard is watching.
He's watching this match, Chris.
Tully Blanchard's watching this match. Does this mean something? Okay, back to the match. Blanchard's watching this match. Do you think that they're being subtle at all with this Tully Blanchard?
You know what I enjoyed more was the picture-in-picture thing with Daniel Bryan, where they were asking him about, like, how do you feel about various sections of the match. Remember that with, like, Drew Gulak, I think it was?
Yeah.
Drew's really going to train really hard for this. I absolutely think that Drew's going to do good here. Wow, it doesn't look like he's doing so good in this part of the match. Yeah, good stuff. Then we have the Hikaru Shida promo. Anything to say about Shida?
No.
Yeah.
I think she's fine. I think they're going to do another open challenge gimmick. They may bring in Thunder Rosa to fight her once. I don't know. They need women.
They do.
We're getting Ivelisse next week. That's an interesting choice.
Dreams do come true.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess we can talk about the main event here. Cage.
Well, let me. I'll take my victory lap. Vicky okay. Guerrero, the new manager for Nyla Rose. I would have really liked Vicky to come out and cut a good heel promo, as opposed to a WWE heel promo. I worry that they're going to go with, this is who they know her as, so we're going to present her as this type of thing. And she's just going to do the excuse me, and it's just going to be nothing but the grating voice thing, because that's what all the fans remember her by.
Yeah. And if she doesn't have another idea, I don't know, you know, who's going to give her...
I don't see them coming up with a new one. I think
right,
it's just,
exactly. I think they're just going to run with, you know, we'll give Nyla Vicky Guerrero, and this is what we'll be working with here. It's okay. It would be better if she was doing a better performance. But, you know, I mean, the problem is Nyla has been pushed in every direction you can be pushed in this division at this point.
Well, the promo show in and of itself is ridiculous. It's like, I'm not going to, I told you I have an announcement, but I'm not going to make the announcement. And it's just, I'm going to show you it. And then it's like, she comes out and goes, I'm not going to tell you guys anything. I'm like, what is the point of either of you two people being out here if none of you are going to talk? Get out
right.
of here.
Well, I mean, because the spoiler is we want to have a match against Hikaru Shida, which has all the intrigue of, oh man, I don't remember what happened in my life 6 to 7 months ago. We've seen this match. We know what happened. Shida won the belt off of Nyla Rose.
Chris, what are the chances that in the next 3 months that Brandi Rhodes is the AEW Women's Champion?
Next 3 months?
Yes.
Gonna say 20 to 25%. I'll leave that 25% open because of health stuff.
I got a pure 50-50 on this one. I think it's high. I think they may belt her.
Really? Why? Flesh it out.
Because she's becoming more and more of an in-ring performer with this new tag team with Allie. She's going to have the Allie match somewhere down the road when QT comes back and he's absolutely pee-whipped by Allie and gets turned on at some point, but he's going to be a heel up until then. And then the next feud is probably going to be the winner of that feud versus the AEW Women's Champion. And I think it's going to be Brandi versus somebody, either Nyla or Hikaru Shida. And then maybe she gets a win by banana peel or whatever, but I think she may be the women's champion eventually.
Eventually, yes. I just think 3 months is a little soon for that timetable. The only way I could see that happening is if Brandi gets booked the same way they're booking FTR, which is let's just move you light speed through every single team in our division or every single matchup in our division, and then we'll deal with what we do with you after we get through all of that. I don't think they're going to rush that quickly with Brandi. I think the Allie thing could play out a little longer. I'd hope they'd slow burn it. And I also think, you know, having her beat Allie is a far cry from having her go ahead and beat Nyla.
I liked Cage Moxley. I dig Taz on promos. I dig Moxley on promos. I think those two are fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. Taz has been so solid.
Taz brings a certain level of just up yours, I'll kick your ass-ness in his promos that I live for. I live for the stupidity of daddies and brothers in promos, but I just live for guys who are just going to say, I'm gonna make you feel pain.
There's something
brother.
About him ringside, too, right? Yeah. Like his aura ringside is different from other managers who really feel like a non-entity. Because you know that Taz was like once a great wrestler or whatever. You could hear his voice when he's calling out stuff in the ring. He's good at sounding engaged when he's actually like doing his, you know, throw-ins from the side, you know, just mentioning stuff. And I liked the spot at the end of the match with Moxley staring into Taz's face and really forcing the issue. Like, I thought the finish to this match was particularly strong.
Yeah, Taz is Pauly Walnuts from The Sopranos. It doesn't matter the level of slight. It's always like the invasion of Poland to him. He's just always going to be mad at everything, no matter what. And he's just, you just see him out there, and he's like one word away from jumping in the ring and beating on the guy in there with him. I love the dude.
Yeah, no, I liked this match. And, you know, for our concerns with Cage, I thought that Cage and Moxley had a really good match here. I thought this was a cool match. It was really well laid out. Kind of surprised. Like, not the outcome didn't surprise me. Just, like, the flow of the match kind of surprised me. I was like, oh, we're doing this style of match. And, like, he's working the arm. Okay, that's cool. It was creative. It was a solid match. Like, good. Good hand.
Are you happy that FTR got their truck back?
God, I'll tell you what. I was so worried. I was worried about the truck. You know how I feel about trucks and entrances.
It didn't start. That's the
Yeah, and then the truck didn't start, which, like, is that they're going to work that in, or maybe that's part of the conspiracy. But also, like, how did the Butcher and the Blade pull that off? Oh.
Going to the main roster. It's another banner week for Bayley and Sasha Banks, in my opinion.
They're just so fun. Like, they're like not even working with the deepest material here, but, like, they're just hilarious.
They're great. their matches this week were fun to watch between between the Kabuki Warriors match, which I thought was pretty darn great, and then the Friday SmackDown match with Nikki Cross and Asuka. I guess that whole wild card, whatever they're calling it now, thing, it doesn't matter anymore. We're just going to have people go on to whatever show they want.
I never believed it was going to last for any length of time. when they first came up with it, I was like, this company does not have enough discipline to keep this up. And they don't have, you know, the big problem with wrestling, to not to circle all the way back to big band stuff, but I will say this. The one thing I'd like to see come back to wrestling is whatever your big upcoming pay-per-view event is, book not only back from that, but from the big show. Like, yes. Actually have a long-form arc. And, like, you know, have what they refer to in screenwriting and stuff as trap doors, where you can get out of certain angles if they really suck, but actually have this deep long-term plan, the way that Ghetto used to have, too, where he'd book the G1 and book everything backwards. Or, you know, I forget the way that they used to do it. But, like, that's what I would like to see come back to AEW. Yeah, and I think that, like, that's kind of an issue with, like, the only thing that would make the Bayley Sasha stuff better, because I think their performances are awesome, is if they're
crowd.
It's not even a crowd, dude. It's a longer, like, a real sense of where this story is going. Not necessarily even where it's going to finish off, but, like, where we're really taking this bad boy. You know, like, who's going where, and I'd like for Bayley and Sasha to be able to plant seeds about where we're going long term, along the way here a little bit more.
The little things like the trash talking in the ring, it's not promo cutting like they sometimes did with Sasha a lot. It's just yelling at Michael Cole. Bayley Michael Cole feud is fantastic. I don't care what any of you say to me, it's fantastic. I've got some blowback on that. Oh, this isn't very good. I'm like,
needed a character. She was struggling so badly at first. And, like, what she's doing now is she's filling out space. She has this big, confident swagger. I will say this. In terms of, like, a quote-unquote role model character, like the ironic role model character, I do think, in that sense, she's not actually doing a good job of kind of nailing that mark, but, like, whatever Bayley is here, which is, like, just kind of like this deliciously obnoxious person at this point.
Yes.
And her deliciously obnoxious friend, kind of like the Iconics, but also different from the Iconics. Like, whatever she's doing, it's fun. It's funny. Could it be a little deeper? Sure. But, like, she's actually doing a really strong performance in a way that she wasn't prior.
Staying in the women's division, a bit of a tease on Raw Talk after this match. Sure, the Kabuki Warriors lost, but Kairi Sane wants to wrestle Asuka, I believe, for the championship. So I'm thinking they may have spoiled the Sunday match on Raw Talk, but or it may just be a goodbye match for Kairi Sane. But yeah, Kairi says, yeah, sure, I'd like to wrestle you. It's been my dream. And Asuka's like, we're the Kabuki Warriors. Of course we'll fight each other. And I'm like, okay, great. Let's see that. So I think on Monday we're getting Kairi versus Asuka no matter what.
Okay. That'll be fun. I mean, I think, you know, Asuka wins. But, no, like, that'll be fun. I like the idea that, like, occasionally Road Warrior Hawk says to Road Warrior Animal, like, hey, we should fight. Or, like, the Viking Raiders do that and just decide to have a match just because.
It's Demolition number 1 and 2 in the Royal Rumble in, I think, 88 or 87. I can't remember which one it was. But
And, like, hey, that totally works, especially, like, on an opener match or whatever. You could just have, hey, this team just decided that they wanted to have a match. You can't do it every week or whatever, but, like, you know, once a year you can get away with doing that type of match, and people can be into that.
Bianca Belair has returned to Raw. I liked the way they introduced her. I liked her promo here for what a WWE promo is. It made her not look like a clown, made her seem important and tough. And then they go out, they beat the Iconics, who are perfectly acceptable heel gatekeepers. I love their obnoxiousness, too. I think the key to my heart is just being obnoxious. I think that might just be it.
Yeah, Billie Kay is what she's really good at is being... She's also good at being big in the ring, but she's, like, a great heel seller. And then, like, Peyton is the worker. And between the two of them, it really does... It works really well as an act.
Billie Kay is such a great flake, is the way I view it. She's not tough, but she's very imposing, and she talks a lot of smack, but she can't fight.
Right, right. No, and like also like when, you know, she makes the Lucy from like I Love Lucy wah face. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, no, yeah. It's good. It's good, you know, heel comedy stuff. Trying to think what else here. Dolph Ziggler.
I'll tell you what was ridiculous.
Oh, go ahead.
I got something that just... Dude, this Garza-Andrade angle. One fist bump is plenty. They had them doing this, checking in with the fist bump 3 different times. And that's where it becomes, okay, this is just unrealistic. Either just do one fist bump after the match... Do the fist bump that's you're gonna get dived on, or whatever. But the way they're doing this is so insulting to people watching this that it's like, look, you're paid professionals to go in there as a tag team, and be a tag team. This checking in with each other every 5 minutes or so. That's what children do. That's not what adults do.
And I mean, this is another good example of a. angle where you don't know.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Oh, what the long-term plan is with Andrade and Angel. Not that they're obviously going to split up at some point, but who does Zelina end up with? Why are they doing any of this? What's really motivating this? Kind of that steady build-up thing. Because, like, it's kind of implausible that you, like, butt heads so much, but then all of a sudden you're just cool again, and then you butt heads even more. Like, to what Jeff's saying about it being insulting to one's intelligence. Like, this is the type of story, it's a perfectly fine wrestling angle, but they should have been booking it backwards, and right now it's really hard to glean what that story is supposed to be.
Well, I think we're getting the Angel Garza, Charlie Caruso love triangle with one of the Viking Raiders.
Yeah, okay, but no, it's going to be a rectangle because, like, Zelina's going to have a crush on Angel. Oh my God, it's going to be a telenovela. And Andrade just is going to want to wrestle. I think, you know, this ends up with Andrade and Eric. They're the tag team.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no,
well,
I thought this out.
One piece of news coming out of the women's division that I failed to... Charlotte came out this week on Twitter and explained her absence. I was given incorrect information by someone I trusted, but it's not cataracts. It's cosmetic, and it has to do with leaking breast implants, which... If you watch the number of times people land on her chest or she lands on someone, I can understand this whole thing, but there's some silicone leakage and she's going to get that repaired because there's some health issues obviously associated with it.
I mean, it just gets back to the whole idea of implants for this type of work, especially if you're going to wrestle the way Charlotte does with a lot of moonsaults and off of your feet wrestling, it just doesn't seem to mesh well.
To me, it's affected most of the women who, in between NXT and the main roster, had them done. The people who have had them done prior to that seem to be okay. I mean, almost everyone has them on the main roster in one way or another, but it obviously affected, like, Dana Brooke and even Peyton Royce to some aspect. It's affected their performance a little bit. I think Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks, it's less so because it's less obvious, so to speak. But, you know, it's You know, it's not for me to say. I mean, if look, if it's their choice to do that because they think they look better with them, I got no problem with that. My problem has always been if there's someone in their ear going, you know what, these would really make you look beautiful and would really, you know, if there's
and
that,
that's
kind of
what's
internal
happening.
Pressure.
That's been my understanding. There's been like the whole, you made it onto the main roster and here are your extensions. That thing. I remember reading about this stuff. It was some time ago, but like that is kind of the issue is that
they go to the main roster and people are saying you're not pretty and that kind of mind screwing.
It's my issue with the way they did Sonya Deville and they, you know, made Sonya Deville kind of like glam up instead of just be an MMA fighter, particularly when you're losing Ronda Rousey and you need someone to actually exude that aura of toughness. Like WWE does have a certain beauty / glamour standard that
speaking of MMA fighters, Shayna Baszler made her return on Raw. Killing geek ninjas.
What? And, God. This. And I think that this is we're going to get her over. This is, we need to make her a badass. What's more badass than beating up ninjas, Jeff?
Say what you will about intergender wrestling. I thought, I mean, look, there's been rumors that Shayna was a Heyman project, and this just might be, hey, let's get her on TV because she has some, you know, she has some stroke there. She has, you know, some credibility, but she's, see, I love Shayna Baszler, but she's the person who they go, hey, WWE wants to sign me. I would say no, because you're not their type. They don't want someone like you on their roster. And everybody would go, well, that's cruel, Jeff. You're killing their dreams. And I'm just like, I
mean, also, it's tough for her character in the optimal system to mesh with their system. Because her character would rip to shred people like the Iconics and people even like Dana Brooke, you know, like a lot of the roster, the kind of, you know, the more glamorous oriented parts of the roster should be by Shayna Baszler kind of demolished relatively quickly. And then
that's why the Elimination Chamber was so great.
Right.
With her.
Right.
Because she just went in there and she just killed people. And
precisely.
It's like, yes, that's what you're supposed to do as opposed to, and this is the other quote-unquote big piece of news, but apparently back in January, Vanessa Bourne got the call to go to the main roster, but she just hasn't been able to debut yet because of the whole COVID thing.
Well, and here's the other thing, though, with Shayna Baszler. The other thing with Shayna Baszler is that she's now being reintroduced into a dynamic where Bayley and Sasha are the through line through the shows. Yes, you have Shayna Baszler versus Asuka, but okay, let's work in this out real quickly. Shayna Baszler defeats Asuka. Now you have nothing but heel champions, and then Asuka's, I guess, just in the chase indefinitely against all of these people. But, like, what does that really get you? And so then what do you do with Shayna Baszler? Are you going to turn her babyface?
I'm here for the Nia Jax feud with Shayna Baszler.
Okay, yeah, like, Shayna as a babyface overcoming Nia Jax, I'm actually kind of into that, sure.
You know, I just think now you put her in that kind of B program with the larger wrestler. You show how much of a badass she is. You figure out what you're doing with Bayley and Sasha in the meantime. Are you splitting them up? Are you keeping them together as a two-woman power trip? And then you can balance Shayna against either of those two, and you can have either one win. It doesn't, you know, it really doesn't matter per se who wins in a Sasha-Shayna feud, although I think Sasha needs it a bit more. Bayley could lose to, although Bayley's lost to Shayna already. So Bayley's a weird thing because there's a story that she can't beat Asuka. There's the story that she kind of has trouble with Charlotte. She hasn't beaten Shayna. You know? It's like, well, she kind of needs wins against the bigger stars of the division. She's beaten the lower level people plenty of times. So I don't know, but as long as you're building two stars to then eventually meet, I'm good with that.
Yeah, no, I'm into that. I think that's the right move. It's tough to see where Shayna's fit is long term, and you know, even turning Sasha face, it doesn't feel like the right time to turn Sasha face. Like, it doesn't really feel like the right time to split up Bayley and Sasha.
Yeah, I agree. We'll get into that when we get into the pay per view. But I want to just we could go through SmackDown a little bit, or we could go through NXT here. They tried something with SmackDown this week in terms of the beginning with the cutting promos at the beginning, but they still felt like WWE speak in so many ways. It was a different presentation.
I liked that feel, though, and what I really liked is how it resolved with the New Day actually in-house. So it was like, you thought that they were cutting a promo. You could hear the difference when they were on the microphone. I was like, why does that sound different? And then you realize, oh, we're actually in the show. I thought like there was a nice kinetic flow to that, and that did stick out to me. But like, this is a well-worked show. This is a really watchable show. It's just kind of like, you know, minus if you black out the Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman stuff, this is a very watchable show.
And the Lacey Evans.
I mean, but like, the SmackDown women's division's just like, if it's not Bayley and Sasha, it's just, you know, it's a silly place to be.
Who knows where. I don't even know what roster Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross are supposed to be on anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I liked the way Alexa Bliss has this sort of, like, is playing it both ways. Like, she's obviously a heel, but, like, right now she's ratcheted it down so many notches right now, and I really appreciate like the understated, like, layered nature of her performance with Nikki Cross here.
Matt Riddle loses to AJ Styles and then gets beaten up by King Corbin.
The worst part of this match, like, the worst part of this match was the handshake, and then basically Matt Riddle gets goobered out by Baron Corbin, and like, AJ walks away. So it's like, was AJ in cahoots with Baron Corbin? And I don't know. Maybe he was. Maybe
tell,
he wasn't.
You can already tell what Vince doesn't like about Matt Riddle. It's the shoe thing. Because, man, they bring that up a lot.
Yeah, right. Now it's gone from, oh, that was a great story, to like, now, oh, it's kind of funny. Like he probably doesn't like that he smokes pot too. Like, he doesn't
bring that up on air, though. He brings up the, oh, are his feet going to get cold again? Or, man, this guy can't even remember his shoes.
No, where it'll be bad is when he gets the cold feet jokes. Oh, do you have cold feet over that, Matt? They're coming.
Before we get into the horror show preview, let's do NXT and get through that. To me, the show overall felt like they were just retreading old feuds, and I did not understand this show in some ways. I get what they're doing with the table setting in some ways. Tom Phillips appears to have done a heel turn on commentary.
No, but it was only for that one match. It was so weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's only when it comes to Robert Stone, and only in particular to the Tank. Because I was listening for the rest of the show, and he wasn't particularly heel in any other way. But when it comes to Robert Stone's reality, Tom appears to be part of the Robert Stone
brand. I want Tom Phillips to either be part of the Robert Stone brand, or to hate Shotzi Blackheart for some weird reason.
Yeah. Or like, again, or like, him and Robert Stone are actually friends.
I wanted
friends.
A tank as a kid, and I never got one, and now Shotzi.
No, that was really bizarre. And then you have Indy Hartwell defeat Shotzi Blackheart, and like, I don't know. You get Indy into Robert Stone's faction, it's like, I don't know, she's another Aaliyah.
Yeah, I just don't know with this. I don't know if they're going to put Killian Dane in there eventually, you know, if he wins this match. It felt like all the matches were things we had seen, but with nothing new being said. You had
what they did is they got to the beat with Dijakovic that we want, where Karrion Kross wants to square off with Dijakovic. But, like, it was weird to have Keith Lee.
You didn't need the match to get there.
You certainly didn't need the match to resolve. Like, because if you want to keep Dijakovic strong going into this match against Cross, the way you want to book this match is Dijakovic appears to actually have the upper hand on Keith Lee. Like, yeah, we're talking like a 60-40 booking. Dijakovic, though, is like hit some big moves. Lights go off. Cross comes down, interrupts the match. And so, like, there's this, like, little lingering question of, like, maybe Karrion Kross cost Dijakovic the title. Like, he would be champion. And also, Kross is this man obsessed with Keith Lee, blah, blah, blah. And Dijakovic respects Keith Lee and wants to have this match against Karrion Kross. And now is going into this match against Kross, which he's going to lose with this aura of toughness at a championship tier level, which is where you want to get Karrion Kross.
What are the chances that Dominik Dijakovic's Raw debut was sidelined because Dominik Mysterio is on the roster?
You are only allowed to have one of this. Yeah, one name. Yeah, right. Like, so there can only be like one Steve or one William or one Mike or whatever. So that is true. So he would have to be Dijakovic, but I bet you Vince would be like, why are we calling him Dijakovic? Like, his name should just be Dijak, and I totally see him on Raw becoming Dijak as just, like, one name, like Cesaro.
You had Damian Priest versus Cameron Grimes. I don't understand why we had to have this rematch right now and kill Grimes dead. Just have Priest move on to something else. It was baffling to me, quite frankly.
Grimes, on a week-to-week basis, needs to just be in the prelim matches going up against, like, undercard guys and swaggering about and stuff. Like, you have to build, like, if you're going to have him where he is in the card, especially as a heel, he needs to keep getting decisive victories over not that impressive competition. And having him lose to Damian Priest again kind of just sets that project back. Otherwise, Thatcher versus Denzel DeJarnette. I like the Thatcher stuff. I think, like, this.
The Thatcher stuff's actually it.
Yeah.
If look, Chris, you and I, if we had looked at each other, and said what one guy should never go to WWE because they just won't get him, I think Tim Thatcher's the guy. It might have been Drew Gulak.
Yeah, and I think having Drew, it's great that you said that name. Having Drew Gulak, I think, is why they're actually handling Tim Thatcher the right way.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's the experience with seeing, like, Gulak reintroduce kind of the stretcher gimmick and that sort of stuff. A lot of the template that Thatcher's working with now is what Drew Gulak was doing on 205 Live during his championship push before he went PowerPoint presentation.
Denzel DeJarnette is a guy I want to see groomed by somebody because I think he's talented as hell. I love his look. I love his size. I love his amateur background. I love the singlet. He'd be the guy in Shoot Nation. He's basically right now, he's Angelo Dawkins back in the day because Angelo Dawkins was part of Shoot Nation, had the great amateur background as well. I want someone to find something in the kid to give him some personality, and let's see what he has. I like him a lot.
And then Tegan Nox lost to Io Shirai, and like it
was okay, but nobody ever bought that Tegan Nox was going to win.
Right?
This thing,
yeah,
so.
Yeah. And so once you make it the main event, you know, I was definitely mentally checked out just because I thought the odds of Tegan Nox winning this were basically zero.
Yeah, and I love the underdog story. Why not keep it? Why not just find something else for her to do? You know, I thought Io had a good match with her. I thought Tegan kept up, but she's obviously, she's not Io Shirai. She's good. I'm somewhat.
Here's the intrigue to me. I think the intrigue is Tegan Nox going heel and joining Dakota Kai to help Dakota Kai become champion.
I don't think that's happening. I think the opposite is happening because you have the Raquel Gonzalez thing. So I think what's going to happen is those two are going to beat on Io, and then Tegan's going to come out for the mutual respect angle and then eventually get a rematch, I think, after Io beats Dakota. I want Dakota to bring back the baseball jersey. I like the baseball Fury look from the Warriors with her. I think that's the stronger look. But I'm also here for a Dakota Kai, Io Shirai match. Something fierce. I think those two are going to do quite well together.
Yeah, no, I think Dakota Kai and Io Shirai will have a good match. And
My fear is that it's going to be turned into like a triangle match with...
Yes, right. Oh, Tegan. Yeah, Tegan could find herself in the match there. And like the one thing about Tegan and Dakota is just like they have been running in place a little bit. Like
it's a fight forever angle, and I think it needs to be separated for a
while.
It's
not Gargano Ciampa.
It's not even KO and Sammy. So
right.
Yeah, I rebuild Tegan Nox in a way, but not within this angle. And I'm afraid that they're going to just reinsert her in here.
That's the problem with the NXT division, too.
To be the second for Io. And then it's going to be a tag match where, you know, people get various wins of certain kinds. And then we get to the, title match and event. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe during the takeover that those two fight each other. You know, Raquel Gonzalez comes in to interfere. Tegan comes out to even out the odds and then hits Io. Io loses the title, goes to the main roster to replace Kairi Sane. And then we get the Sasha Bailey of NXT. Sort of.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, there's a couple of different ways it could go. All right, so we're going to do this pay-per-view preview.
Yes, I have. Unfortunately, I have gone away from it on my...
Okay, well, that's
Wikipedia,
all right.
But let me get to it.
Here, get it up, right? That's all right. That's all right, because we got the... We're going to do a little bit of Samba.
God. This will never appear on the show again. Because I hate fun.
No, this is fun. You're having fun.
Level of Casio is that? Is that like the little white one that everybody used to have when I was in middle school? Or
so this
like
is a this is a Casio SK1 sampling keyboard. I'm trying to let me see if I can find the year that this puppy was made, but I want to say this is like 1990 circa. It is, yeah. No, dude, this thing's great. Like,
I like drum machine pads on it.
So it doesn't even have drum machine pads. Like, this only does, like, two octaves. Here's what the drums sound like. You'll notice that there's actually an echo on it. So it's like, and that, you can't get rid of that. That echoes no matter what. So, like, if I want to do, like, a drum, it's like, you know, that's it. That's the Rick Astley. You like Rick Astley, right?
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down.
Never gonna give you up.
I think that song's overplayed, but it's okay. I like White Boy Soul. I do.
And no one has more soul than Rick Astley.
Oh, no, that's just garbage.
No, that's not garbage. That's truth. He actually does do cool stuff now, though. Like, he's doing,
he has
like
a great voice.
Yeah, no, he does actually have a good voice.
I just hate that song. That song is so
I don't know why you're
white
saying
bread
this.
Dance pop thing. And
that
I
song
no
makes
with,
people feel good in their hearts.
It's Howard Jones more modernized. How about that?
This has got to be one. This has to be one of your worst takes on anything ever.
I know. I like the song. I find it's overplayed. I thought the Rick rolling really killed the song.
Wow.
Because it was funny for a short time, and then you saw it on the Macy's Day Parade, and you go, "This thing's jumped the shark. What are we doing here?" Anywho, it was on the Sesame Street float, and they're starting to do something, and then they Rick rolled the entire audience, and that was kind of cute. Did Rick Astley have a follow-up hit that you can name?
Yeah, it's called Together Forever.
Oh, God, I forgot about that one.
Wow. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry that just happened on this show. Yeah.
High school.
But
dance.
Remember, the High Wattage is out. You can check it out over on the Patreon. And, Jeff, are you ready with that card?
Yes. Yes, I am. God. Rick Astley, not on the card, but on the card.
Unfortunately, it's the reason why it won't be a 7-star classic.
We could have Spandau Ballet. We could have Howard Jones, the Thompson Twins.
I know this.
Little Steve Winwood. Come on. Yeah. The New Day, Big E and Kofi Kingston taking on Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships in a table match because, oh man, you remember that time we put them through a table? That was so much fun, Shin.
That promo on SmackDown. You know what's funny is it like Nakamura and Cesaro have good chemistry with each other, but like the copy that they had to work with for that promo was just crapola.
Oh, it was terrible. It was absolute. You know, the steel cage match. I just shivers in my.
No, the best part, yeah, the idea of them doing the New Day dance against a steel cage gives me chills. Like what? Like what the hell does that even mean?
Do we keep the champions or do we have new champions?
I'm going to say we do have new champions.
Wow. I'm going to say no because of the SmackDown rule of go-home shows. If whoever has the upper hand going into the match will lose it. So I think the New Day beats Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. I think this match could over-deliver, though, so I think
I think this is going to be a good match, but I also don't think they give a shit about who's the tag team champions on a week-to-week basis. Yeah. That's what I'm just calling this on. I don't think that there's any investment. I just think, well, let's just change the title.
I suspect that there will be at least one match added to a pre-show, maybe a Viking Raiders versus Andrade and Garza match or something to that effect, but that is not on here, so we will not pick it. Apollo Crews, your United States champion, taking on MVP.
I think Apollo Crews wins this match because I think they're doing a longer story here with MVP trying to turn people against Apollo Crews.
I think they turned the person this week, whoever it's going to be, and I think it's probably going to be Cedric Alexander. I think for some reason... Because it makes no sense whatsoever to turn Cedric Alexander after being in a full Nelson by Bobby Lashley. So, of course, it's going to be, well, I can't beat him, so now I'm going to join him type thing. I think Apollo Crews does beat MVP here. But I think it might be by DQ. I think Bobby Lashley may enter the ring and just beat up Apollo Crews, and then I'll set up the next match for SummerSlam, Apollo Crews and Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, that's true too. So, and then maybe Cedric turns somewhere along the way. But they've planted this seed with turning Cedric. They can't really pay it off here going into this matchup. So it's got to be Apollo retains.
Or maybe Cedric's the red herring, and they're going to turn Ricochet. And yeah, let's ruin that guy's goodwill.
I mean, more than R-Truth continuing to make like stupid Richard jokes.
Oh dear Lord. Rey Mysterio taking on Seth Rollins, eye for an eye match. The match can only be won when one competitor extracts an eye of their opponent. Chris, who's becoming a Cyclops?
So I think that Rey has called in a solid from his old pal, Ciclope, down in Mexico. He is going to be wrestling under that mask heretofore with like question marks added on, obviously, so you know who it is. And that's how we're getting out of this one.
Oh, no, he's going to be Cyclops from the X-Men because you know how Ray loves to do the comic book cosplay. Come down as only having one eye in the... I think it's time for Dominic to finally become the heel apprentice.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, that's long overdue.
If Austin Theory ain't back for a while, it's time to get Dominic into that stable. So he's going to help Seth take out his father's eye, and it's going to break Ray's heart. And we'll continue from there. Who do you like?
Who do I like in the Seth Rollins versus Rey Mysterio match? Chris, yeah, I think you're dead on. I think Seth wins. I think Rey has to lose here. And then he's under the
sequel. Here's my question. How does the person who loses their eye miraculously get it back? Is it going to be, are we going to get some vignette where there's some exploratory surgery that we've never heard of?
And I think what we're going to say here, or maybe Ray just like wrestles with the mask, like what he's got right now with the screen. I think maybe he just has the screen.
He's blind justice. And he
can, well, no, so here's the deal. I think what they're going to work with is the idea that the eye's already damaged, and that's going to be the eye he quote-unquote loses.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how does he get the eye back eventually?
Why does he need it back?
Well, no, they're going to have to do a story eventually where the eye comes back, right?
So you're saying like maybe Sheamus has the eye and he has to go and wrestle, because Sheamus is like obviously the gatekeeper of like bad stuff. So like Sheamus, for whatever reason, has his eyeball and he has to defeat Sheamus.
It's like, well, no, they have the eyeball stored in a jar. And then one day some doctor says, you know what, Ray, I might be able to attach that.
Oh, better yet, robot eye.
You know, maybe Mae Young gives birth to a new eye.
Oh, man. So, like, Ray gets, he gets a robotic eye made.
Oh, he's a cyborg.
Well, not a cyborg. He just has a cybernetic prosthesis. Like, that doesn't, you know, this is like, it's integrated-ish.
What can this eyeball do, Chris? Can it shoot lasers?
No, so it allows him to analyze the attack and defense stats of the opponent wrestlers that he has.
It gives a +2 on.
Yeah. No, it helps him, obviously, with early detection when it comes to high-flying moves. Going off of the top rope, obviously, it helps with making sure you're targeting for splashes, moonsaults, things of this sort. This is a prosthesis that is really designed for the ring. It might be good for other stuff. Maybe.
Are they going to make up the gap in the eye and show it on television like a horror movie trope where it's like you actually see where the eye should have been in later matches? Like he has an eye patch and they tear off the eye patches. Oh, my God.
Oh, okay. So here's the deal. He just needs to holler at his boy Riggs. Like that guy figured it out.
Or PCO. Anyways, Braun Strowman taking on Bray Wyatt in a Wyatt swamp fight. There are rumors that there are live animals involved in this swamp fight somehow. I'll go. I think Eric Rowan is making an appearance in this match.
Do you think that means that Bray wins the title back?
Is this for a title? I don't know if this is for a title or not, though. That's the weird thing. I don't know. I don't know what happens here, to be honest with you. I just think my only thing is I think because of the number of times he was in that video package without them editing him out in any way, I think Eric Rowan is involved in this somehow. I'll go with Braun Strowman, though, winning against the two of them. Maybe he's not the Fiend, or he tries to turn into the Fiend and he can't, but he's in his... This becomes... There's going to be a lake of reincarnation in here that where... Bragg turns from Max Cady, Cape Fear, Waylon Mercy, Bray Wyatt into the Fiend and maybe into the sweater-wearing guy. I think we're going to have a few of those in here.
Yeah, no, I think he becomes the Fiend. So I kind of have Bray winning this match.
Okay.
Yeah, just because...
Because of the way Strowman did the promo.
Yeah, if it's non-title, Bray wins. Because of the way Strowman did the promo, where he's like, I'm scared of the Fiend. God.
The one that has vexed me all week, and I don't know how it's going to go, Bayley taking on Nikki Cross for the SmackDown Women's title. Bayley gets the win in the match. Nikki gets the beatdown backstage. So the rule is you have Bayley win the match because she's the one going in defeated, but boy, I could see them taking the title off of Bayley here. She's had it for such a long time. I love her to death. Everybody who listens to the show knows I probably overpraise her. Is it time to have a new champion with Nikki?
So here's the fun wrinkle, I think, to this show. And I think, to your point, what they've kind of been teasing on commentary, what if Sasha wins against Asuka, Bayley loses against Nikki, and we still have the two-person power trip, but now who has the two belts has inverted, And can Bayley tolerate that? Because Bayley's been so into being Bayley Dose Belts.
Yeah, it is an interesting wrinkle. Okay, we can talk about Asuka and Sasha Banks at the same time because the two wrap into each other. I could also see Sasha not beating Asuka and then Sasha eventually ruining Bayley in her title match, but them still having the title tag team titles and having to get along with each other. And that becomes the onus of the split. Because my problem here is I don't see Asuka losing the title so soon after Money in the Bank. Although I don't think she needs the title necessarily to be great. That's the weird thing is, of all the champions, the title means the least to Asuka right now, to me. Because she's just such a overwhelming presence whenever she's on.
Yeah, and Bayley and Sasha's story right now is super title dependent. Asuka, whether she's the champion or in the chase, I think Asuka is where she is on the card. People know who Asuka is.
Yeah, and she's always going to be a star at this point. I don't think she can lose her luster unless you know.
You'd have to jobber her out to like the Iconics and Dana Brooke and everyone down the card. Yeah,
they did that a couple times on SmackDown. You remember that cage match that she had that one time with James Ellsworth, like, ends up smacking her head in the cage or something, and she ends up losing, like, a dope to Carmella. Didn't hurt her one bit. Boy, what are we going to do?
James Ellsworth and Carmella and Asuka. Wow. That's a moment in time right there.
Oh, Chris, I don't know where they're going to go. To me, the interesting choice is to give them all the titles. But I don't think they're going to do that because I think they're going to play up the jealousy angle.
That's why I was suggesting do a little switcheroo move where at the end of the night, Sasha's the one who has a title.
That sounds right. I have worries about Bayley not being a singles champion because they don't. Sasha can play chip on the shoulder. I don't know if Bayley can just yet. And that's the thing. Because Sasha's always had a chip on her shoulder with her character, no matter where it was, whether it was NXT or the main roster. It's always, I deserve this. I'm the boss. You're usually shading me for Charlotte type of thing. She has that vibe, and she pulls it off. She has what I call the Tully vibe. She's not the star, but she's definitely the number two star. But she wants to be the number one star, and you can feel it in everything she does.
I think this would give Bayley the opportunity to do that. You just have to rebuild her a certain way where she's having, matches the next couple of weeks against the Dana Brooks of the world and like really pummeling into them and really laying into them. And then after the match, super saccharine with Sasha, super supportive. But you could tell that like Bayley is just livid about not being a double champion.
Needs to be the heel in this though too, and that's the weird thing is that they've been
Sasha having the belt opens up that portal as well.
I think so, but that's the thing is they've made Sasha the petty one in interviews, which is so I don't want that. Here's what I want. I want the opposite.
You wanted
to be
this
true,
booked
like,
backwards in well, a no, coherent they cut, way.
No, but hear me out. They cut the Sasha Bayley promo where Sasha challenged Asuka, but instead of Bayley challenging Nikki Cross, she challenges Sasha and says, I'm going to take that title from you because I'm the best. And Sasha's like, wait, what? Bayley needs to out-heel Sasha in this feud, and I don't know if they can get around that. That's my fear here. But I will go with you. I think, okay, let's have Sasha win the title. And let's have Bayley lose her title, and let's see what happens.
And then what
and
else we have?
The main event, quote-unquote.
Oh,
yep. Stipulations to be determined. And I think those stipulations will be determined during the course of the match. Dolph Ziggler taking on Drew McIntyre in what will be the least anticipated title match because nobody expects Drew to lose the title.
And that's the reason none of you ever believed in Dolph Ziggler. But this Sunday, I am going to finally reach up and I'm going to steal the show and steal the belt. I'm Dolph Ziggler.
This is going to be your standard, I lose. But wait, the stipulations of this match were submission only. The stipulation was this match was no DQ. The stipulation of this match was a chairs match. And he's just going to keep on adding and adding. He's going to keep on losing and losing until he finally gets caught up in his own his own evil plans come back to bite him, and Drew wins.
Yeah, no. No, this is going to be really anticlimactic. I don't even think they're going to have like a real good work spot. Like, I don't think the spot where they're actually working is going to be particularly well worked.
Okay.
I have really low expectations for this match. I think this angle sucked, and I just these guys don't really, there's nothing to it. Dolph's just a very dead in the water guy.
Yeah, and I think we don't even find out who Drew's next opponent is till the end of Raw on Monday, because I get the feeling Randy's going to beat the crap out of the Big Show, send him packing, and then it's going to be Randy and Drew. I get the feeling that's where they're going with this.
I mean, that seems to be the kind of intriguing thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, Randy's been a hot character. I even like the part where he's already kind of setting the table for, like, Rick, don't you cross me.
Oh, Rick's getting RKO.
Yeah,
Rick,
no, I know.
Rick,
Rick
wants to take an RKO
yeah.
more badly than any. The one guy in this company who wants to take a bump is the guy who shouldn't take a bump.
Yeah, but no, I like the foreshadowing with Rick and Randy. Like, that's what I want, you know, when I'm grumping about other stuff. Like, Rick and Randy, it's not perfect, you know, the Big Show stuff, show is show at this stage of the game, but Rick and Randy, you know where this goes. Eventually, Rick tries to stop
it's
Randy.
Scorpion and the Frog. And then
The Frog is evil too, and Rick's the dirtiest player in the game, but Randy has even surpassed the dirtiest player in the game. So it's like the new Sith Lord overtaking the old Sith Lord. It's not quite Emperor and Darth Vader, but like kind of that thing. The evil old master getting overtaken by an even more evil and more cruel new master. Like the full culmination of Randy. I like it. I think it's good.
I will be on the Extreme Rules post show with Sean Ross Sapp over at Fightful.com immediately following Extreme Rules. You can hear my hot takes then. You can hear my cold takes next week. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can follow the show at ShakeThemRopes. You can get Chris's high wattage at Patreon.com/ShakeThemRopes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. All sorts of shows for all sorts of interests in professional wrestling. Chris has interest outside of professional wrestling. I do not have time for such things, but Chris also does podcasts about other things.
Yeah, and we're bringing in the rumba beat for it. You can find...
Dude, you missed your cue because you're trying to get that damn keyboard working.
I didn't miss my cue. I was getting the rumba beat going here. Look, I'm going to get some jazz organ going. Yeah, baby. So at DWATG... is where you can find the show. We're at don'tworry.tv. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. Don't worry about the government's name of that show. We're also on Spotify, so go and check it out. The All in the Family podcast, also available for you to check out. And keep dreaming out there is what I say to all of you.